What you need to know for every game to make your best bets. Will you fade or will you follow? Welcome to the Weekly Wager. Broadcasting live from the Pottawatomie Sportsbook Studios in Milwaukee. Alongside Josh DiMaggio, here's Ben Brust.
It is the Weekly Wager live from Pottawatomie Casino Hotel and its amazing sportsbook. I'm Ben Brust alongside, as you heard, Josh DiMaggio. You can get into the show always on the Cardless Talk and Text Line 800-990-3776 or see us on YouTube at ESPN Milwaukee. As I have debated where to start with this show, since KBN ended at 5 o'clock, I was like, well, the Milwaukee Bucks start the season, Chris Middleton's coming to town. Josh DiMaggio made me literally laugh out loud as we were doing a YouTube special watch-along because you laughed at all three of Shohei Ohtani's home runs.
Uh-huh.
And it was so relatably funny that I think you probably did what everyone couldn't do, right? Like, like part of me to the dire end was holding out hope that even though Shohei was on the mound, he was dealing like, you know, this is a team, the Brewers team that came back 8 out of 14 games that they won in a row. Like, I was in the mental, like, do whatever you can to find a way to be positive, when really you just knew. And I knew, but right. I didn't want to accept it, but you let it out.
I had advanced in the stage of grief, stages of grief to already acceptance. And that's what you watched happen in game 4 on our watch party. We got what was one of the, if not the singular best postseason performance of all time by Shohei Ohtani, who pitched 6 innings, struck out 10, and then hit 3 home runs.
No. He didn't hit home runs. He hit
moonshots.
Yes.
Bombs.
No doubters.
Like, off the bat. You laughed when it hit the bat because you knew.
Yes.
And it's
the
hard.
Sound of the second home run reverberated in a way I don't really ever hear.
Like, the only way I knew the third one to dead center was going was his reaction off the bat, because it looked like, you know, going dead center, he maybe got under it a little bit, but he's so damn powerful and good that it, like, even if he did get under a little bit, that thing was gone. And so the Brewer season ended, and it sucks. I'm not going to lie. For the what I'm coming to grips with is, as I bought FanDuel as a streaming service because I didn't want to miss any game that I could and go through the journey and watch the team develop. It was an amazing season of watching Mizorowski get called up, to Quinn Priester win 19 games in a row, to Andrew Vaughn have a great stretch of the season, to Terang discovering power, to William Contreras grinding through the injury, to Yelich outside the playoffs having a good season, Sal and Terang in the leadoff spot early on, like, you, Caleb Durbin, like, you can name a guy, and Isaac Collins had a Rookie of the Week and Rookie of the Month and an NL Player of the Week. Like, there are so many things that you went through to enjoy with this team that it's so hard that when you get to the playoffs and you come and face the Dodgers, that the way it ends, it feels like crap. And, like, you can do, was it a successful season or not a successful season? I'm just venting that it sucks because it was so fun and it wasn't a fun ending.
Yeah,
I think that's where I'm at.
You hate to go out that way. It was a great season, a memorable season, a season that kind of reset expectations, I think, for a lot of Brewers fans, and just what this small market team with limited spending ability or willingness, however you want to phrase it. It sort of changed how you perceive the Brewers, how you perceive Pat Murphy, and you perceive sort of their system of bringing up guys and making them.
But not in the playoffs.
And what happened in the playoffs was, I think you ran into a buzzsaw. I think it's also, here's the simple fact of the matter. That team, the Dodgers, is favored to win quite decently against the other best team in baseball, the Toronto Blue Jays. And it just sort of states to what different games they are playing. And the way
he's got six home runs, Josh. He's got six home runs in this playoffs alone. Yes. That might be like a Brewers franchise history record, and this is one playoff series. And there's three other things that popped in my head. Before the season, 83 and a half wins. Uh-huh. They then set a franchise record.
Yep.
Three straight division titles against the Cubs where they weren't favored to win the division after they spent more. The Cubs spent more money this offseason thinking that it would be theirs, and having the best record at the All-Star break to having the best record in baseball. All of these great things happen. And then on that stage where I was looking forward to seeing what the Brewers had to show the world that it is a different year, and it wasn't.
It wasn't. And I think that it's a learning experience. It's a moment to sort of reflect on what caused the collapse in the postseason of the offense in particular. I also think it sets up great for our belief in Jacob Mizorowski and Chad Patrick with the way they both performed in the biggest moments of their lives to this point. I do think it does put credence to maybe the Brewers being more aggressive around the trade deadline and maybe focusing on, yes, we can field a team that's going to win a bunch of games, but when things get tighter, when pitchers have shorter leashes, we need power. We need home run hitters, and you don't need to, I'm not saying go get yourself a Shohei, a Freddie Freeman, a Mookie Betts, a Teoscar Hernandez. Just go get one guy, one more that you feel like, hey, this guy, as we saw, a Eugenio Suarez single-handedly changed the game and won a game.
He had a grand slam and a home run in a game to extend their series.
Was the singular person that mattered. They didn't end up winning that series, but they took it a full seven.
And he didn't end up having a great second half of the season, but he's a player in that moment that could come through. And so as I'm having conversations with people about the Brewers and looking ahead to their trajectory, they're going to have a lot of players back.
Yep.
But the question is, all right, I love Bryce Terang and Sal Frelick.
Yep.
But they can make a jump, but can they make a leap? You know what I mean? Like that's the difference, is like they are going to get better, but how much can they get better? And can they get better to a point where like any one of these guys on the team can do what we've seen other stars teams do, from a Vladdy to any of the Dodgers to, as you mentioned, Eugenio, or you know, you're even talking about a second baseman in Jorge Polanco, who had two home runs in the DS, or I guess in the DS. And it's just like those are the things I'm thinking about now as I look at the season in totality, or who are going to be those guys that you can look at on this team that not make the jump. We talk about in football from a year one to year two to year three, taking that next step, continuing to get better. But this is like, if you want to be great, and not just be a habitual playoff team, how are you going to get past where you are? Because we know what the recipe is to get here, and the recipe is great, but it's not World Series great.
Listen, I think Bryce Terang's a certified top five second baseman in all of Major League Baseball. He's won a Platinum Glove. He then had this power surge that seems to be something repeatable, but he had a postseason that I'm sure he wants back. But I think that goes for pretty much everyone besides Caleb Durbin.
Yeah.
In terms of the bats, you feel good, hopefully, about Christian Yelich moving forward, Contreras as well. I think Sal certainly has more growth he can do and more you can get out of him just as an overall player. But beating the singular best fielding second baseman and then having 20-20 possibilities of hitting 20 home runs in a year, that you could do a lot with that. I do think there are improvements you can make in the margins. Certainly, your shortstop provides you next to nothing when it comes to being at the plate, but you do like his defense. And I just think there's probably one spot on the field you have to pick and find, hey, this is going to be where we're going to get our power. Christian Yelich isn't that guy anymore. He does have, you know, 20
some pop,
home runs.
Yeah, 29 he had. But, like, there's you need a 40 home run guy.
Yes.
And you can still play the way that they play and have somebody who just connects a little bit more and gives you more of a different way to win than having to win a specific way every single time
you
play. You
can leave eight of the other guys the same, play the same exact style. I'm fine with that. I just do think there is a next step that the team needs to take. And let's not forget, and I don't think it would made a whole hell of a lot of a difference. They didn't have Brandon Woodruff for the postseason like they would like.
He was going to go 7 or 8 innings.
He was pitching well. I do think he probably is the difference in a game or two throughout the postseason, just for what he is, the experience he has, and his penchant for showing up in big moments seemingly every time he is asked to do. The problem is we just haven't been able to see him for those big moments recently.
Sorry, I had to get it all off my chest. it's just been weighing on me, because like pitchers and catchers are going to report, and I'm going to get excited, and opening day is going to come, and I will have a perspective on this team with Pat Murphy leading it into a confidence that I'll have throughout the season. But now, even in a franchise-changing year of 97 wins and winning all those three eight-game winning streaks, it didn't matter, and you didn't have those in other years you went to the playoffs. But you were thinking maybe this team had something different, and it was more of the same. And obviously, they ran into Shohei and the Dodgers and the great pitching that they provided in all four games. So I'm just reeling right now and in acceptance, and it took me a while to get there. I think it reminded me of when my career ended as a college athlete. There was a week of like disbelief, and then
then it
hit me, and I think it's hitting me because I didn't have the strength to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. Our hopes were as high as they possibly could have been for this Brewers team. Winning the most games in all the MLB is not an accident. It's not a fluke. Over the course of 162 games, that stuff typically corrects itself. I do think the Brewers were probably playing their worst baseball to end the season then into the playoffs. They still managed to win a series against the hated rival, which has some value. But as we all know, what we want here is a World Series, and we can take our moral victories and we can fly the L flag for beating the rival down south. But the goal is, and the goal maintains, making and winning a World Series. Hell, if they made the World Series, and hey, the Blue Jays were better over the course of 7 games, you can accept that. There's still an empty taste, a bad taste left in your mouth for going out the way you did, with not even really ever threatening the Dodgers, except for when Roki almost allowed them back in the first game in the ninth inning. Otherwise,
I wouldn't want to go in after someone threw the minimum through 8.
Nope.
I got to be perfect.
And that, frankly, was more, I think, the Dodgers helping them than the Brewers helping themselves.
Well, he's Josh DiMaggio. I'm Ben Brust. And on Sunday Night Football, Aaron Rodgers, the future Hall of Famer, the Green Bay Packer legend, is taking on his former team for probably the only time in his career as he is at the end. So I do want to get to that, because Matt LaFleur had an interesting way of talking about Aaron 2 days ago and talked about his relationship with him today. But, like, look, there's a lot of meat on the bone here, and we got to get to that next.
This is the Weekly Wager, live from Pottawatomie Sportsbook on 94.5 ESPN and at ESPN Milwaukee on YouTube.
The Packers are at the Steelers on Sunday Night Football. Aaron Rodgers probably gets his only chance to play against his former team. Matt LaFleur says, it's just another game. That old stuff is for you guys to talk about. Well, partially true, because we are going to talk about it.
And so is his defense.
I did find it fascinating that despite the fact that there are still 13 players on the team, you know, about 15%-ish of the guys that played with Aaron Rodgers at one point as a Green Bay Packer.
Mm-hmm.
Even the young guns, like Evan Williams grew up a Rodgers guy. Micah Parsons' jersey swapped with him when he was a rookie, because he, you know, could see the talent that he had. Keyshawn Nixon, you know, playing out there with one of the GOATs and wanting to pick him off. Like, it's a big deal, and it's a deal at minimum. This is a big spot from a, you know, an emotional standpoint, and if we're being honest, the Pittsburgh Steelers aren't the best team in the world, but they're a formidable team. They have a decent record. They have a proven track record of success in the regular season. And so this isn't going to be a game where you can just show up, in my opinion, the way they have the last 3 weeks and walk away with a win. They have to execute.
Yeah, listen, the Steelers this year have been competitive. They have a good record. They also, by the metrics, have been the worst defense against the worst offenses. So the teams that they are facing, they have performing as bad as you possibly could. But you have the added fact of a veteran team who it knows how to and will take advantage of your mistakes, and the fact that, oh, Aaron Rodgers really wants to beat the Green Bay Packers. And I don't think it's he wants to stick it to Jordan or he wants to stick it to LaFleur. It's all about that front office. Brian Gutenkraus, as he called him with Devontae during that period of time. This is a game where the Packers are favored, but I think when push comes to shove and the plays on the field, this is about as even of a game, a pick'em, as can be.
I truly believe that if it goes south, Arthur Smith is going to hate his life.
Yes.
Because he will get all the blame yes. if Aaron Rodgers doesn't play well. And it's just going to be all, well, the way that the offense was put together, you know, I had to change so many plays and didn't like the approach. But if it wins, it's going to be so proud of our guy. You know, he's going to just take all the glory as well. So I'm obviously fascinated to see the approach, because he does get the ball out quick because he knows his limitations. It almost feels a little Joe Flacco-y from a comp standpoint of like what you're going to see this defense try and do. You're going to see this defense try and get to Rodgers. The longer Rodgers has the ball, I would say Joe Flacco almost maybe has more escapability than Aaron Rodgers at this point in his career, and that's saying something.
Yeah, he is not moving particularly well. We did see the arm is as good as it's ever been. He threw the ball, I think it was the
69 yards.
Yeah, it was the second longest tracked ever throw in the air from a NFL quarterback. He still has that part of him, but when it comes to pressure and when it comes to having to get the ball quick, a thing he's not typically been the best at, for all of us who watched Aaron Rodgers during his Hall of Fame career with the Packers, there is an opportunity to take advantage of all of that. But I'm also worried about the outside corner in Nate Hobbs and the fact that DK Metcalf is probably going to give him all he's ever been able to handle.
If George Pickens was able to give Nate Hobbs the business, DK's speed and size will absolutely do the same. I had asked this, knowing that Goody was the answer. Who do you think wants it more, though, Goody or Rodgers?
I think it's Rodgers, just based on the personality we know. I'm sure Brian Gutekunst would absolutely love to win.
But Roger said there's no ill will in his press conferences.
Yes.
He's showing a lot of gratitude.
I think in this moment he is doing his best. And when the game starts and the bullets start flying and the pressure is raised and you're on primetime TV, he is going to – and not that he's going to try extra hard, but do I think we're going to get the best possible version of 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers? Yes, I absolutely think that. He has 5 interceptions on the year. He has two multi-interception games already this year, which is very rare for Aaron Rodgers, even this late in his career. So there is opportunity, but I would venture a guess he's not going to be making many mistakes.
Well, he's going to be in full I can't throw an interception mode.
Yes.
Because he has been prone to throwing more interceptions. He has, I think, 29 since he's moved on from the Packers, and in the same time, Jordan Love has 25.
And that might play exactly into what the Packers want. More, as we know, more time for Micah Parsons is all the better. So if he does get into, I'm unwilling to put the ball at risk here, or he holds on for it too long and the routes don't develop the way he wants, there is opportunity for the Packers' defense. I don't imagine, just knowing with his level of mobility and how good Micah Parsons looked, I don't imagine Micah's going to get very many one-on-ones. So that's going to be both a challenge to Jeff Hafley in the defense and getting him into advantageous spots where he is able to manufacture some of that. And then also it's going to be on Rashawn Gary to show up and perform and maybe make a big play like we saw last week, which we hadn't seen in the previous two games to that.
If I'm the Steelers, I'm taking Darnell Washington,
yes,
who they've actually had conversations about turning him into an offensive lineman,
yes,
even though he caught a touchdown pass last week.
Uh-huh.
Whatever side Micah Parsons is on,
just follow him.
It's literally that.
Yes. I mean, he's like 6'6", 300 pounds. He could play tackle if he so chose to. He's just quick and pretty decent at it. But he is their answer to the Lions using a 6 offensive lineman. They just put the next best thing and the biggest tight end in all of football out there.
And as they should, because obviously Micah Parsons was in shock at the way that
yes.
the Arizona Cardinals went about giving him one-on-one matchups, followed.
My big thing on this game is just the degree of difference in how, if the Packers perform the way they have in recent memory in their past three games against a veteran team led by Mike Tomlin and a veteran quarterback and they're veteran everywhere. They're older on defense, but those are guys who've been through it before and aren't going to let you get away with the stuff the Packers have in the past few weeks. The end of game scenario we saw happen against Jacoby Brissett and the Arizona Cardinals, Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers aren't giving you that opportunity. They're going to put you away. They're going to do all they can. And it's either going to take somebody making a crazy individual effort or the Packers to play their cleanest football game since we've seen, I don't know, maybe week one against the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, I mean, Washington was pretty clean, but at the end of the day, we're seeing what Washington is on the whole. I guess when I think about specifically looking at this from a game perspective, when you've seen the Cowboys, the Bengals, and the Cardinals of the likes, do you feel confident in this Green Bay Packers team? Like, their record is 4-1-1.
Yep.
But it doesn't feel... Like, again, you are what your record says it is.
Yep.
But you'd be lying to yourself if you think that the Packers are playing good football right now.
Right. Yeah, so short answer, no, I don't trust them. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to eventually trust them. It's still very early in the season. The Packers are still working on figuring out exactly how they're going to work their offense. And they're figuring out life with a superstar, one of the best defensive players in all of football, if not the best. And I think things are going to get better. But right now, there's frankly too many mistakes, and I think a lot of them start with the head coach and his decision-making. And then it's simply they really want to run the ball. They've been ineffective against that, so that allows teams to play the too high shell coverage with the safety sort of staying over top of everything. So there's a long ways to go, and there's many boxes to check. But I don't think by any means this is going to be a team we're looking at come week 18 going, yeah, they're a playoff team, but I've got no faith in them to win. I think, as we know, the season changes a lot. Jordan Love's first year, he looked like a guy. Maybe we should start looking at who's available in the first round in 2023. And then to end that season, he had the single best quarterback stats for like 8 weeks.
So now I want to hear from the Josh DiMaggio who despises Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I talked about it on Mr. Irrelevant and a little bit on Jen Gibb and Chewy. I've grown more apathetic to him now.
You're such...
Just because I don't think the Steelers are any real threat to be a success. I think they're going to have a fine record. They're going to make the playoffs. They're not a Super Bowl team. I don't think they're even really close to that. I think the Baltimore Ravens still have a very good chance of winning the AFC North, even with the difference in records between the two. And he's not saying the things that would typically drive me crazy and make me angry. It's sort of just like everyone's like, I'm glad you're having a fun time playing football. I wish you the best.
You're over the ex-girlfriend and like they're just they found somewhere else to be.
Yes,
go be
happy. I think a large part of that is he's not appearing weekly on a radio show where he decides to try and dismantle and discredit every person who says anything about him. I think that's a big difference because early in his career, when he was doing the show with Jason Wilde, he was amazing. You got all these insightful things about the game and about him as a person. And then it turned into him trying to seemingly get back at everyone else he ever deemed wronged him. And that's gone away. And that was what really made me angry about him. Now he's just kind of, he's off in Pittsburgh. They are what they are. If this had happened, this configuration had happened, and it would have been with the Jets the year he left, it would be a lot different if they were successful. But now it's like, we're 3 years past it. It's cute. Go have fun. Make the best of it. Stay healthy.
Wow. This is an accepting Josh DiMaggio to others.
Yeah. I mean, will he at some point throughout the course of the season decide that somebody did him wrong and slighted him, and then spend the entirety of his press conference trying to defame that person? Yeah, probably, and that will drive me nuts. But also, did you see the breaking news? They have learned, much to everyone's shock, that you remember his darkness retreat?
Yes, I did see this, Josh.
Yeah, bad for your health, actually. Isolating yourself and staying in darkness and not communicating with humans for days on end, not actually good for you.
That's just, but not to be Aaron Rodgers, that's just one person.
One study, yeah.
That's one study.
Yeah. As we know, do your own research, Aaron would say.
Oh, man, he might have to make an appearance on McAfee.
To discredit?
Yes.
I bet he loves Huberman. Andrew Huberman, the podcaster and the neuroscientist, I believe is his technical title, is a guy who said it. So he's a big Rogan guy. He's between a rock and a hard place with this one.
Interesting. The people that are closest to you in thought may be against you.
Uh-huh.
What do you do with that? Do you go scorched earth?
Ignore it.
When has he ignored something?
Never.
Well, maybe we're seeing the new Aaron Rodgers.
And to be quite honest, like, the fact the way he treated Jordan Love and did hold to his word, he hasn't held to his word on many other things, but the way he treated the quarterback left him in a good spot, able to take advantage of and learn from him. Keyshawn Nixon talked well about him. Micah Parsons had a really cool thing where saying, like, he asked for my jersey as a second year. Like, that stuff of the good Aaron Rodgers and the person we grew to know and, like, really like, that stuff is cool to hear in a moment like this.
So what I want to do now is, now that we've talked, gotten over the Brewers and the acceptance phase of what had happened, talking about this matchup between Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, is focus more on the Packers from a what you can look at from a betting perspective. And part of that goes into the way Matt LaFleur runs his offense.
Mm-hmm.
And there are no props just yet, but we can almost talk about the props without talking about the props.
Yes.
Of what you should be looking for, and that's next.
Gone and close the curtains, 'cause all we need is candlelight, you and me, and to say goodbye, darling.
Looks like we're up. Ben Bruss and Josh DiMaggio.
Hello.
Weekly Wager from Pottawatomie Casino Hotel and their amazing sports book. I want to jump into what some props people should be looking at are for the Green Bay Packers positionally. I'm having a hard time with Matthew Golden.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can bet him.
No.
There's too much variance in terms of target share. He gets targeted three times in the scripted drive, and then
yep.
It turned into we throw to the open guy, and he had one catch later in the game.
Yeah, so that to me, what you mentioned there, the fact they went to him early and often was a clear sign that Matt LaFleur recognized, hey, this guy probably deserves a little more than we're giving him. But what ended up happening as they get into the offense and the flow of the game, those targets then get shifted to Romeo Doubs as the primary guy on most of the plays they run. I don't think he was four targets, four receptions, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
If anything, it was five.
Yeah. So basically, that's just telling us they don't have him in the playbook to sort of be the feature that I think I've recognized and can say for sure he is deserving of more targets just because of his ability to get open, his explosiveness, his speed over guys like Romeo Doubs. Now we have the added factor of I saw that Christian Watson has a potential to play this week. That changes things a lot. I do think they're going to bring him on slowly, but those routes have to go to somebody. So that's another added layer. And at this point, Matt LaFleur is completely unwilling to commit to his first-round pick. I was pleased to see Tucker Kraft lead the team in targets because I think there's two guys that should pretty much every week have six, seven, eight targets, and that's Matthew Golden and Tucker Kraft. So, yeah, until we see it, bet on the anytime touchdown for Matthew Golden as a lottery ticket and celebrate it when it happens. And other than that, you're just kind of – the problem is he has no floor in terms of how few – yards he's going to have or even receptions. It's hard to guess week by week. I think also there's a big thing happening with the change of the kickoff rules that yardages is down for everyone. And trying to make bets on guys like that who I think in any given week could have like 100 yards if he has two big catches. But he could also, as we saw last week, have four targets. They all come in the first drive. And then it's about 40 yards, and you're left thinking, well, this is not really where I want to be.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot recently with the ball being placed at the 35 or in the 40, all those different ways where the field is you're two first downs away from being in field goal.
Yeah, there's two major things happening, and one's been taking part for a while. That's kickers can absolutely bomb it. We watched a guy who was going to be a substitute teacher 2 weeks ago kick a 61, set a franchise record for the Packers, and do that with not being for the team for as long as he was. And then almost every single drive is starting further away from your own end zone, making you have less yardage. So that all those things are factoring into, I think, a decline in yardage. And let's be frank here. Matt LaFleur is going to run the ball as much as he possibly can. The Packers are always one of the lowest teams in neutral pass rate. They're going to grind you out. They're going to give it to Josh Jacobs as much as he can take, and they believe that's going to set up their pass game. So if the run game isn't working, your pass game's going to suffer.
Yeah, the next thing I wanted to hit on is I think about this Green Bay Packers team and assets that they have to give the ball to is we mentioned Josh Jacobs. But Tucker Kraft is probably the one where I'd say if you're looking for somebody,
yes,
you go to him. Because even throughout that game, he let him in targets, but he really wasn't targeted heavily until later in the game. But it seems to be, again, they talked about it enough before the season, how much they were excited about him, that's something more consistently you can count on. But we have this conversation, you and I, because I can't for the life of me understand the Matt LaFleur approach of not, even after a scripted drive, focusing on getting playmakers the ball in spots.
Yeah.
Because you look around the league, and even after scripted drives, you see them, you see other teams feature their stars,
I believe,
all throughout the game.
Ja'Marr Chase had 16 catches. I believe 22, 23 targets in that game. You see guys like Justin Jefferson, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. They all get featured. They all get hammered with targets. Puka Nacua is another one. Davante Adams on the same team also doing the same thing. I do think, and it's not overwhelming, and we can't make a trend of it, but Matthew Golden having four targets in the first drive and then Tucker Kraft having 10 throughout the course of the game, I think that was Matt LaFleur's way of admitting that, yes, we probably need to use guys more. He's never going to admit that. He's going to say we don't run an offense like that. But that was a noted and stated change than we've seen in previous weeks because, as we know, having watched Davante Adams here, who I think you could even argue at a time Aaron Rodgers went to him too much.
It's not an argument.
Even if he was open or not. One was the fact that Davante didn't need to be open to make catches and make plays a lot of the time. And other times it was just simply, that's the only guy I can trust.
It was the detriment of the team against the Niners in the 21 playoffs.
So I do think there has been a change. Now, listen, this could change in 2 weeks, and we're back to, why is Romeo Doubs leading the team in targets and only has 57 yards to save for it? Don't we think that's an issue there? You were talking about the prop bets. I feel confident in two of them on a week-to-week basis. It's Josh Jacobs he's going to score a touchdown. And then Tucker Kraft, his yardage every single week. And now, obviously, it's going to fluctuate if they continue to target him the way they are. But he is the type of guy, like a George Kittle. If he gets the use, he can take a ton of yardage from you. He can make plays in the open field. He's not simply a catch-it-and-get-tackled guy. He's breaking tackles. He's hurdling guys. He's stiff-arming guys. Those are the two on the offensive side of the ball that I do feel relatively good in a week-to-week basis. Now, will there be another time that Tucker Kraft only has two targets like he did 2 weeks ago? I'm certain of it, and you'll end up losing that week. But I think, overall, those are the winning options that you have.
Well, we will get to our picks next, and everybody give a round of applause.
Thank you.
Josh DiMaggio finally up to some winning ways here.
Winning
3-2.
Yep.
4-1 for me, making it 14-10 overall for Ben, 8-16 for Joshy. But he's on the way up.
We're on the way back.
He is on the way up.
The road to 500.
I mean, where are we at? Week 8?
Yeah. And we're doing 5 picks a week.
Yeah, absolutely.
We got plenty of time.
Just got to stay hot.
Just if I go 3-2 the rest of the way out, we'll get ourselves in a good spot.
All right. Well, we'll hit the 5 games I'm looking at right now coming up next and get you the picks and follow Josh at your own risk. All right. We will get to the weekly wager picks. Josh DiMaggio, 8-16. How am I 14-10 and you're 8-16?
Are we off on the math?
We're off on the math. I thought after 4-1 I'd actually have a better record.
Hey, hand up. I haven't done the best job of keeping track of these. I show up, I say my picks, and then I go home and I go, wait, which side of this game did I have?
Oh, Joshy, come on.
So, hand up. I'll take a little ownership over that. And we'll be better. And we'll figure out where we went wrong.
Well, how about this? We get the picks and we go from there.
Yes.
Vikings +3.5 at the Chargers on Thursday Night Football.
Yeah, this one is...
Josh is 8-16 overall and Ben is 14-10, so that's 24 games apiece.
Oh, that's right. The maths.
So it was right and you just weren't doing the mental math right?
Correct.
Okay. Thank
Onwards.
You, Chris.
Go ahead.
I'm going to take the home team. I'm playing the Chargers, who I think are struggling a bit, but the Vikings have a big problem with Carson Wentz. He was as bad as I've seen a quarterback be, as inaccurate as I've seen one. Thursday, traveling to the West Coast, playing against the Chargers. I'm going to take the Chargers -3.5.
Yeah, I'm with you. I the Chargers have been one of those teams where you've expected more out of. But they still have way more of a ceiling than the Vikings
yes.
do from a like game.
I think
game
the Vikings
standpoint.
Are very good, and I think they are regretting not bringing Aaron Rodgers in, if I were to be honest about it, because let's be honest here, JJ McCarthy injury isn't as long as they're keeping him out for.
Correct.
They're scared, but they're being nice.
They're
yes.
scared.
Yes.
They're scared to see what he looks
yes.
like. We're both on the Chargers, -3.5 at home Thursday night. This one is interesting. The Bears, who have won 4 straight games,
yep.
+6.5 at the Ravens with Lamar Jackson practicing on Wednesday, which was today, after being out with the hamstring injury.
I believe Lamar plays. I believe Lamar comes back with vengeance, and I think they put the Bears back in their spot. They're up to 14 in ESPN's power rankings. I think they're a decent team. They're not a win for 5 games in a row team. Now, the spread is 6.5, so they're accounting for here the fact that they believe Lamar Jackson will play. My opinion would change on this. Even if the number changed to favoring the Bears, I would still probably pick them without, but I think it's time to turn it around for the Ravens and make a serious push here. Did you see? They took the ping pong tables, the bags.
I saw that this was a player decision.
Veteran decision. They are getting serious there, and if they want to make the playoffs, you have to win pretty much from here on out.
Without the ping pong table.
Yes. No ping pong.
Yeah. What I will say is I like the over 48.5.
Yes.
Both teams, the Ravens defense stinks. The Bears defense has been
uh-huh.
good, but they've had so many injuries and they played a weak schedule.
Their schedule is terrible.
I see Derrick Henry and Lamar both eating.
Mm-hmm.
It just, I'm gonna lay the points. They're in desperation.
Yep. It's one team fighting for their life, the other happy to be there.
Correct. So far, same page.
Yeah.
Cowboys plus 3.5.
It's either good for me or bad for you.
Yeah. You're right. Or yeah, no, I'd say it's good for you.
I think the Broncos are frauds. I think Bo Nix stinks. I think the Cowboys win this game outright. I think they aren't going to be able to keep up with the Cowboys offense. Dak Prescott, had he been playing on a team that could like consistently win and look good and had even an average defense,
MVP type
he
season.
Would be MVP. Now, if he plays even like a good quarterback, they probably end up losing this game and not covering the spread. But the way he's been playing, I like them plus the 3.5.
Yeah.
And I always like the underdog in shootout games. This has a total of 50.5, which has a potential to be a game that touches like the 60s.
We're on the same page. I like the Cowboys.
Yeah.
I liked the Cowboys last week, and they took care of business handily. I'm going to go with the Cowboys. Don't just do opposite because you think you have to do opposite.
No.
I'm getting 3.5.
Yes.
Like, if it was a pick'em, I might lean towards the Broncos. But if I'm getting the hook in 3.5, like, the Cowboys can win this game outright.
Here's the thing.
CD and George Pickens have been good. We've obviously talked about Javonte Williams. His offense is good.
Yes.
But do you trust that Bo Nix fourth quarter last week is someone who can be in a four-quarter game? I don't.
Here's the thing. I think the Broncos might have the best defense in the NFL, but I think the Cowboys might also have the best offense.
Fair enough. Let's move to the Packers minus 3.5 against the Steelers on Sunday Night Football.
Is that one 3.5 or is it down to 3 right now? I can't
remember. It's varied between 3 and a half.
Between it. I'm going to do something here that might surprise you. I'm going to take the Steelers plus 3, and I think they are also worth making a money line bet on. I like also the under of 45. I think it's going to be a sloppy game, an ugly game, and Jordan Love is going to lose to his sensei, his master, the man he's a protege for. You're with me?
Yeah. They just haven't given me enough confidence to take them on in this road spot in a big primetime game.
Maybe I'm just on it this week, Ben.
It scares me. I'm doing really well. I shouldn't have had you go first for all these.
You can take the last one first.
Sounds good. I'll take the last one since we're on the same for all four. I like the Commies plus 12.5.
I don't. I think the Chiefs are the best team in the NFL. I think the Commies are in big trouble. Their old team can't stop getting hurt. I think the Chiefs are going to have one of their easiest paths to the Super Bowl this season that we've seen a team have in recent memory. Rashee Rice is back, and they're funneling him targets. Xavier Worthy hasn't even really been a factor. Pat Mahomes is the MVP right now and will likely win it. The way he's using his legs, I love the Chiefs. I think they are going to put on a show and run it up on them.
Give me the points.
It's a lot of points. I realize what I'm doing here. This is a classic Ben bet and a classic Josh bet.
For sure. Give me the points.
You don't even really have a ton of reason. It's just a lot of points.
Give me Marcus Mariota backdoor covering on a 20-yard run in garbage time.
And you'll probably be right, but I'm all in on the Chiefs this year.
All right. Well, that is the Weekly Wager with Ben Brust and Josh DiMaggio.
ESPN Radio coming up next.